Senator Pogemiller.
Morning, Mr. President. I'd like to impose a call of the Senate, please.
Senate's under call.
Mr. President.
Senate will come to order. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
Okay, on the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Today's chaplain is Senator Gary Kubley.
It's okay. We'll get Scogan up here for this yet. Shall we pray? Creator, Redeemer, and indwelling Spirit, we come before you this day recognizing that nearly every holy book, every religion, every spiritual tradition recognizes that for human beings, our normal state of mind is marred by a fundamental defect. Out of that defect grow fear, greed, and the desire for power. These are the factors behind war and violence on a national and international scale, but they are also the cause of conflict in our personal relationships. They lead us to distort our perception of others, even here in this chamber, O God, and that leads us to misinterpret situations, which in turn causes misguided actions that move us into a void that cannot be filled. But fear, greed, and the desire for power are not in themselves the dysfunction we're talking about, Lord, and our attempts to eradicate them are usually unsuccessful because they are not the cause. We can't become good by just trying to be our best. But this fundamental defect, this nature of the human condition, gives rise to another insight, the possibility of a transformation in you. So today, Lord, we ask for your presence in our lives that will lead us in ways to quiet our egos and their struggle for superiority, their tendency to attack those who disagree, to that small, still place within ourselves that knows freedom even while we are in prison, that recognizes elements of truth in the midst of distortion, and that knows who we are in the midst of so many forces trying to make us into something else. So whether by gradual growth or specific insight, lead us into that transformation that will help us to see we are all members of the same human family in you. In your strong name, amen.
Amen. Thank you. Nice message. Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Berglund, Betzold, Bonhoff, Carlson, Chaudhry, Clark, Cohen, Dahl, Dibble, Dill, Dahl, Erickson Ropes, Fishbach, Phoebe, Foley, Fredrickson, Gerlach, Gimsey, Han, Higgins, Ingebrigtsen, Johnson, Jungbauer, Kielash, Koch, Coring, Kubley, Langseth, Latz, Limmer, Laurie, Lynch, Marty, Metzen, Michelle, Moi, Murphy, Olsen, Olson G, Olson M, Ortman, Pappas, Pariseau, Perry, Pogemiller, Pretner Solon, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Rummel, Saltzman, Saxhog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Skogan, Sparks, Stump, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Vandeveer, Vickerman, Uyghur.
Quorum is present. Messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file herewith returned. Senate file number 2844, a bill for an act relating to labor and industry, modifying elevator provisions. Signed, Alban A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House of Representatives. And, Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate file number 2427, a bill for an act relating to property held in trust, clarifying status of certain distributions, etc. Senate file number 2427 is herewith returned to the Senate. Signed, Alban A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Betzel.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate do not concur in the amendments to by the House to Senate file 2427, and that a conference committee of three members be appointed by the subcommittee and conference committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On the Betzel motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate file number 2758, a bill for an act relating to economic development, authorizing the development of a virtual assistance network for Minnesota entrepreneurs. Senate file number 2758 is herewith returned to the Senate. Signed, Alban A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Boniff.
I move that the Senate concur in the amendments by the House to Senate file number 2758 and that the bill be placed on its repassage as amended.
Senator Boniff, tell the senators what the bill is a little bit and what has changed since it left the Senate floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate file 2758 is the Minnesota Entrepreneur Resource Virtual Network. Just to remind members, that's the e-portal that would be on the website where we are working with the Office of Enterprise Technology, as well as the Minnesota Chamber has offered their assistance to create a one-stop shop on the website so that small businesses can come there and find all that they need, both for ongoing concerns and startup issues. The amendments that the House made said that the network must disclose the value of the donations and the names of the private sector organizations that are providing funding for the network. Before, we had said they should do the names, now the value as well. Requires the private sector funding be for general support of the network. So, for example, we couldn't use that funding for advertisements to be on the e-portal. We do not want this to be a commercial site for advertising, so it clarified that language, and then finally just clarified that any portion of the network involving state information systems is subject to the authority of the Office of Enterprise Technology. We had referred to that in a cross-reference but had not spelled it out, so there were no major changes in intent. Thank you.
On the concurrence, Senator Betzel.
Mr. President, Senator Boniff, I'm looking at the House language. I don't know if this is also in the Senate language. They had a report from the commissioner to the chairs and ranking minority members of the committee's jurisdiction over economic development on the progress towards the network, and it's due by September 30th of 2010. Was that in the Senate language, or is that something the House added?
Senator Boniff.
Mr. Chair, Senator Betzel, that was the Senate language.
Okay. Mr. President, Senator Boniff, sorry I missed it, but of course that means it's going to come in around election time, and I'm not quite sure how many people are going to be paying attention to it, and the current chairs of those areas may not necessarily be the chairs next year, so it's questionable what the timing of the report is going to accomplish.
Mr. Chair, Senator Betzel. I agree. I don't know how we didn't catch that earlier in the process. We'll have to review that report when we're back in session.
On the Boniff motion on the concurrence and repassage, any further discussion? Secretary will give the bill its third. Pardon? On the motion to concur first, excuse me. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Third reading.
Senate file number 2758, a bill for an act relating to economic development, providing for the development of a virtual assistance network for Minnesota entrepreneurs, etc.
Secretary will take the roll. Secretary will close the roll. There being 53 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and still agreed to. The next order of business is first reading of House bills. There's one printed on today's agenda. The bill will be referred to the committee as indicated. First reading of House bills. Next order of business is reports of committee. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that the committee reports printed in the agenda be now adopted.
On the motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. The next order of business is second reading of House bills. There are two printed on today's agenda. Without objection, second reading of House bills. The next order of business is introduction and first reading of Senate bills. They are printed on today's agenda. Without objection, introduction and first reading of Senate bills. The next order of business is motions and resolutions. There are four authors' motions today. Without objection, we'll take them as one motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Under resolutions, there are three resolutions on today's agenda. Without objection, the resolutions will be sent to the Rules Committee. Now, remaining under motions, messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce that the House has adopted the recommendation and report of the Conference Committee on House File Number 3164 and repassed said bill in accordance with the report of the committee so adopted. House File Number 3164, a bill for an act relating to higher education, regulating the transfer of credits within institutions belonging to the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities system, etc. House File Number 3164 is herewith transmitted to the Senate, signed Alban A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House of Representatives.
Senator Clark.
Mr. President and members, this conference committee report is the Minsky credit transfer bill. And I move that the foregoing recommendations on the conference committee report on House File 3164 be now adopted and the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee.
Okay, Senator Clark, a brief explanation of the bill and what has changed since it left the Senate floor.
Yes, Mr. President. As I said, this is the Minsky credit transfer bill. There was very few differences between the House and the Senate. The main thing that we were working out was making sure that through each of the institutions and through the Minsky transfer website that clear information be available to students, to faculties, to employers, frankly, to parents. And what we worked out was that there would be a template developed from the Minsky system, worked out with faculty and students to be used as a template, and just a couple other minor changes. So it's good to go.
Discussion on the bill. Seeing none, Senator Clark renews her motion that the foregoing recommendations of the Conference Committee report on House File 3164 be now adopted and the bill be repassed as amended by the Conference Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
House File Number 3164, a bill for an act relating to higher education, regulating the transfer of credits within institutions belonging to the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities system, requiring a report, etc.
Secretary will take the roll. noted. Desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 55 ayes, 0 nays, the bill is passed. Its title agreed to. Remaining under under messages.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file, as amended by the House, in which amendments the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate file number 2790, a bill for an act relating to public safety, modifying provisions related to certain juvenile records, etc. Senate file number 2790 is herewith returned to the Senate. Signed, Albany Mathewith, Chief Clerk of the House of Representatives.
Senator Moore.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate do not concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File 2790 and that a conference committee of three members be appointed by the subcommittee on conference committees on the part of the Senate to act with a light conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On the motion by Senator Moore, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, remaining on motions and resolutions, I move we take up the general orders calendar.
Okay, on that motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, I move the committee that the Senate do now resolve itself into a committee of the whole for purposes of taking up the general orders calendar.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Pogermiller,
I'd like to designate general orders the Tuesday, April 27th list, number 43. Delete number 40, Senate File 1590. That apparently is now in an omnibus bill. So the second bill on that list, delete. And we will do. I designate the other four bills then, and I would yield to Senator.
I think. Senator Kubley, did you wish to have your bill taken off the list today?
She left after Rural Caucus, apparently.
So she's not here today?
No, and Bergman can do it, but she isn't here now either. So put me at the end anyway.
Okay, Mr. President, we may or may not be able to do number 43, so let's put that at the end. Apparently a member wants to amend it, and that member is not here, so... I yield to Senator. I'll designate Senate File 3019, but let's put it at the end of the list. I yield to Senator Dibble then.
First bill on general orders this morning to be considered is number 55 on general orders, Senate File 3055, Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 3055 be recommended to pass.
Senator Dibble, discussion on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. A number of products have been emerging in Minnesota as well as other states from the tobacco industry that we haven't seen before. They're unlike anything we've ever contemplated previously. And as such, we have no ability to regulate for appropriate taxation or appropriate concerns around youth access and marketing and the like. So what this bill seeks to do is to address some of those shortcomings that we have currently in our law as these products start emerging. If you take a look, members, there's several pieces at your desk. One is coming around right now. It's a color piece, and it has some photographs of what we're talking about. There are things that dissolve in your mouth that look like breath mints, that look like toothpicks. There are e-cigarettes that are being marketed as a alternative to smoking inside of spaces where you can't smoke, or as an alternative to as a way to stop smoking, though it hasn't shown to be very effective. Different kinds of smokeless tobacco, a whole variety of things. We also have seen the emergence of cigarettes that are masquerading as cigars. And the original form of my bill dealt with that subject, but we've taken that piece out of the current engrossment of the bill that's before us because there were some questions that were raised that have been proven to be unfounded, but we still need some time to work through those questions at a future point in time. So take a look at that section as well, because we'll be revisiting that subject in the near future. So, Mr. Chair and members, what we're doing is we're trying to define more inclusively those tobacco products for the purpose of taxation, as well as include the new definition of what we call OTP, other tobacco products, in the youth access sections of our statute. So I'll run through the sections very quickly and then stand for questions. The first section, section 2 here, just creates a more inclusive definition of other tobacco products, you know, so that we're talking about things like absorbing, dissolving, inhaling, snorting, sniffing, etc., so that we're capturing these sticks, orbs, strips, etc. We specifically exclude those products that are developed and approved by the FDA, prescribed by doctors typically, as nicotine replacement therapy for folks who are trying to quit smoking. So we're not capturing those in this bill. Section 3, these types of products won't be available in single sets or free samples, an important provision as well. Sections 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10 have to do with local governments and local authority to regulate and do what they need to do to oversee the practice and sale of these in their communities. The first one simply gives that authorization. Section 5 says that these products cannot be sold to minors. Section 6 allows for the penalty if there's a violation. Section 7 authorizes alternative sanctions for those minors who are buying these products, diversion involving parents, involving the schools, etc. Section 8 provides authority for compliance checks. Section 9 provides for an affirmative defense to those retailers who are doing their due diligence. Section 10 says we don't put these products on open shelves so that youth have free access to them next to candy. A lot of them look like candy, smell like candy. We do make an exception for tobacco shops, which is important. Section 11 is the overarching youth access protections, and now we include these new products in our youth access protections. And Section 12 is the same as Section 11, but we drew up a new section to capture those e-cigarettes, as well as a product that's being marketed with e-cigarettes. It's Lobelia, and there's a write-up from the Sloan Kettering Institute about what Lobelia is and why it's not necessarily actually a great nicotine replacement therapy, but it also has its own harms, particularly if taken in conjunction with nicotine, and these e-cigarettes are being sold with Lobelia cartridges. That's not prohibited, but we certainly don't want to be selling these things to kids. Mr. Chair, that's my bill. I'll stand for questions.
Further discussion on Senate File 3055. Further discussion? Seeing none, Senator Dibble renews his motion. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Dibble, I appreciate you bringing this bill forward. And I do wish that we had had more time to take a look at this bill. I would have supported this bill. I see that there are no Republican authors on the bill, which is really too bad. But I did have a chance to sit down with my American Cancer Society members back in my district and look at some of these products. Mr. Chair, would Senator Dibble please yield?
He will yield. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dibble, I do believe that we have to get our hands on this. I do think it's a trend, and it could be very serious consequences. My issue with this bill right now is the procedural part of it, and I'm wondering why it did not go to judiciary because of the penalties to the children, dealing with children, and also why we never saw it in the health budget or policy.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Rosen. I think our Judiciary Chair and our Health Chair is here, and if they want to speak to this, they can. We did have some discussion in Tax Committee about the judiciary the parts that deal with penalties. I'm not on Judiciary, but as I understand, kind of typical practice of the Judiciary Committee is when we're not creating new penalties for that aren't patterned on something that has been past practice, particularly when it doesn't reach beyond the level of gross misdemeanor, The Judiciary Committee is not necessarily compelled. Even though there's a new section, really the reason for the new section is simply so that we don't capture e-cigarettes in the definition of tobacco products, because that, because it, you know, it's only a nicotine delivery device. It's not, there's not any tobacco product in the e-cigarettes. And otherwise, the it was just simply a clarification and expansion of the definition of tobacco products that we added to the part that you see in Section 11. So that was the rationale provided by the Judiciary Committee. And I think the Health Committee similarly felt like this was a bit of a simple clarification expansion on how we deal with and contend with tobacco products as we do now. It's simply modernizing those definitions and didn't feel a compelling need to bring it into their committee. But if the chairs want to speak to it, I'll defer to them.
Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, I wanted to speak in favor of this bill, and the most convincing individuals in my district who argued for this bill, and actually were arguing before this bill probably was even written, were at a county fair, and it was a group of 13, 14, 15-year-olds in an organization called Start Noticing, who were making the case that tobacco companies aim their advertising at young people. In fact, they were concerned, these teenagers were concerned that the advertising was being aimed at individuals younger than they were, and an attempt for the tobacco companies to entice young people to start smoking. Because as one of the handouts that was put on our desks states, that tobacco companies need to entice individuals to start smoking before individuals are 21 years of age and their brains are fully developed. And since I talked with those 13, 14, 15-year-olds at the county fair in my district, they've also been in my office over in the state office building, and they brought with them examples of some of the products that are on this colored display that was handout that was distributed to our desk. And they were really concerned about how enticing some of these products looked. So, Mr. Chairman, members, I think we should listen to young people who are savvy and perceive what's going on, understand the dangers of tobacco use, and pass this bill. Members, we talk a lot about healthcare reform. Many times what we're talking about when we're talking about healthcare reform is really who's going to pay for the healthcare that our citizens receive. There are a few bills that come along that really are healthcare reform that really will reduce the cost of healthcare in Minnesota and the United States. And one of the ways to reduce healthcare costs is to encourage healthy lifestyles. And one of the best things you can do to maintain good health, reduce the amount of health care that will be consumed, is to not use tobacco. So, Mr. Chairman, members, I think Senator Dibble has a very good bill. This will prevent people, young people, from starting smoking, encourage them to lead a healthier, happier lifestyle, and also reduce the health care costs in our country.
Further discussion on Senate File 3055. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Dibble, I was reading the bill, and I noticed that you have some criminal sanctions on the bill, misdemeanor and petty misdemeanor, and I was wondering why the bill did not go to Judiciary Committee where we could look at the sanctions on your bill. Could you tell me why it did not go to Judiciary?
I think he did a minute ago, but do you want to do it again?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Yes, I just responded to that same question from Senator Rosen, and I will just repeat, according to our conversation that you participated in the Tax Committee with Senator Moi, it's not the Judiciary Committee does not always feel compelled to bring, as I understand, I don't serve on the Judiciary Committee, you do, but this is a kind of a clarification and expansion of existing penalties, including that new section, even though it's a new section, is simply stating some misdemeanors, misdemeanor penalties for a product that is in the same bucket of these products, but doesn't actually have tobacco in it. So we didn't want to specifically call it out as a tobacco product. We wanted to treat it somewhat separately. That's the e-cigarette that's sold sometimes with these Dobelia cartridges.
Any further discussion on Senate File 3055? Seeing none, Senator Bonnef.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I rise in support of Senate File 3055. Unfortunately, right now there is an alarming trend of young people using these products. I've been hearing from parents and actually from a close girlfriend whose son has been caught with these products at school. And so I appreciate Senator Dibble for bringing this forward. I think if we can do this, we at least bring awareness to more parents and families that this is a problem and something to watch for.
Further discussion on Senate File 3055? Seeing none, Senator Dibble renews his motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 3055 be recommended to pass. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. The next bill on general orders this morning is number 48 on general orders, Senate File 3075, Senator Tomassoni.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File number 3075 be recommended to pass.
Senator Tomassoni, tell the committee something about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, Senate File 3075 is related to joint powers agreements between governmental units, and this bill arose out of an issue that happened in my district where two cities combined their services, and they actually replaced one collective bargaining unit completely, and they lost all their rights. So what we've done here is put a little wording into the bill that will make it possible for, in the future, if these types of agreements happen, that one of the bargaining units doesn't lose all its rights and they can talk about who should go where. In this particular case, the employees from Gilbert lost all their seniority and had to start at the bottom and went to work for Biwabik. And so traditionally in joint powers agreements, like in sewer districts or in recreation districts, they share services. They share a front-end loader, or they share a baseball field. But whenever they combine, normally employees retain their seniority rights. And in this particular case, that didn't happen. And so this bill tries to get to that issue. We worked this language out with the counties and the cities, and so I don't believe it's controversial. And I appreciate your support.
Discussion on the bill. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And would the senator yield for a question? Tomassoni. Senator, how did they lose that? If they got bargaining units in both cities, how did they lose their seniority?
Mr.
Senator Tomassoni.
Chairman and Senator Ingebrigtsen, apparently it was not a traditional melding of the communities, and when they used a joint powers agreement language to combine Biwabik and Gilbert, the Gilbert employees lost everything that they had accumulated from the bargaining agreement that they had with the city of Gilbert, because they went to work for the city of Biwabik under a different union and under a different bargaining agreement, and so they came in as new employees and started at zero. And it seemed like, I know when this happens with school districts, that basically what they do is they take the two bargaining units and they set up an agreement on who has seniority from both districts, and the seniority counts in both districts, and then they form one district and they make an agreement. In this particular case, that didn't happen, and the reason for it was because they used the joint powers agreement language to do it, and so one was eliminated and the other one just had to go into the new bargaining unit and start at zero.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you. Follow up then. Senator, so the ones that lost their seniority also lost pay because they went down in a pay grade then, is that true?
Sony.
Mr. President, that's my understanding.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So to totally understand this completely here, we get together with these agreements between these joint powers agreements, and the purpose of that is to combine services and not have to cut things to be able to show the public that we're doing what we can to combine services where we, some places in some areas, we don't actually need both services. So really and truly, if you're not able to do that, it would seem to me that by not cutting someplace, you're really doing nothing other than just moving under your bill, just moving everybody over to one agreement. Does that sound the same? I mean, where are the cuts going to be? Is it going to be the machine?
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. President and Senator Ingebrigtsen, normally under joint powers agreements, what happens is two governmental units get together and say, you know, you got a front-end loader, and we need a front-end loader, but we don't use it very often, so why don't you let us use yours when you're not using it? And they make that type of an agreement. Or there's a baseball field that they want to share, or there's a sewer district where they might get together and figure out how to share the district. But they don't actually change the collective bargaining agreements that they have in the two areas. They still have their own employees. In this particular case, what happened was the city of Gilbert decided that they would go under the umbrella of the city of Biwabik, and they had two different unions. And so the city of Biwabik collective bargaining agreement, it was agreed to by the two cities, but they did it under a joint powers agreement that they would share workers also, not just services. And so the workers from the city of Gilbert actually were lost their rights under the agreement that they had and went to work under the agreement from the city of Biwabik. And what this bill is trying to do is it's trying to say that if you do this under the joint powers statute, that at least you give the people who are moving into the new collective bargaining unit the right to negotiate with the new employer.
Further discussion on Senate File 3075. Seeing none, Senator Tomasoni renews his motion that this committee to arise. Senate File 3075 be recommended to pass. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The next bill on general orders is number 52 on general orders, Senate File 214. Senator Betzold.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dill was going to talk to me about offering an amendment to the bill. I don't know if that's ready yet, and I don't know if Senator Kubley is ready to go on his bill. So I can describe my bill. Hopefully, if Senator Dill's amendment shows up, we can take his amendment, otherwise it progress the bill until it is ready. So I need some guidance.
I'm told the amendments are being copied for Senator Dill at this moment, so I think you can proceed.
I'll proceed with the bill, and hopefully Senator Dill's amendment will be ready by the time I've completed the bill. Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 214 be recommended to pass.
Senator Betzel, please describe your bill to the committee.
Mr. Chair and members, Senate File 214, and you can tell it's a low number because it was introduced at the start of last year's legislative session, is a bill that came out of a working group by the Secretary of State to rewrite the laws regarding the notaries public. And this does affect legislators, so there's a few parts in here that you may want to pay attention to. One of the provisions in here deals with the fees that the notaries public pay. We don't change the amount that they have to pay, but we change the method by which it's paid. Right now, under current law, when you file your commission, you do it in the county where you're recording your commission, and then the county has to take part of the fee and remit it to the state for the general fund. We're splitting that up so that you only pay the county what's due to the county, which is the filing fee of the $40, and you pay the rest the Secretary of State to get your commission. So there's two separate fees, but it's the same total amount of money. We are raising in this bill, in Section 2, the amount that a notary public can collect for a notary act. A notary doesn't have to charge anything for doing a notary act, but if they want to charge, right now they can only charge up to $1. That $1 limit has been in law since 1909, 101 years. I will have to note that we did pass a similar bill a few years ago that raised the fee from $1 to $5. Again, it's not mandatory. You don't have to charge anything, but that's a permissible amount. The governor vetoed it because he thought that that was outrageous, that we would raise the fee from $1 to $5, and he thought that was a 500% increase. Keep in mind that the governor also raised the commission fee from $20 to $100 back in 2003. So a notary has to pay about 400% increase in getting the commission, but has to charge the same amount to actually do a notary act that's been in law since 1909. So that has changed. I mentioned legislators. Legislators, by virtue of their office, are notaries, but you're not required to have a notary stamp under current law. And unfortunately, that just means that it makes some confusion because people that are looking for documents that are notarized expect to see a notary stamp. This would require that legislators, if you want to exercise your ability as a notary, you would actually have to notary stamp. The stamps aren't that expensive, but you'd actually have to go get a stamp if you want to act as a notary. We also, in this bill, provide forms by which clerks, county commissioners, county recorders, when they are exercising their office as a notary, there's no form right now for them to do it. This bill does say the format by which they are supposed to exercise when they fill it out. The notary's name on the official stamp has to match the signature. Sometimes notaries have used nicknames. They sign one name as they're signing their authenticating a document, but it's different from that that's on the stamp. They have to be identical. That hasn't been clear in law. Also, notaries are sometimes asked to notarize documents which are not in English. All a notary is doing is not saying that the document is true or false. All the notary is doing is authenticating that the person who signed the document is indeed the person whose name is purported there. But the authentication has to be in English, even if the document is not. The law just wasn't clear on that. The other provisions in this bill require that under current law, a resident of Wisconsin, Iowa, North or South Dakota can be a notary as long as they live in a bordering state. That doesn't make any sense. If the person in a bordering state wants to be a notary, they can do so. They just have to record their notary commission in a county of Minnesota. They have to indicate which county they are doing that in. The term of office has been modified. A notary holds office until January 31st of the fifth year following the commission, and then they can apply for a reappointment 6 months prior to the expiration of their commission. If a notary is subject to a garnishment or a judgment, then if a notary maintains a journal of the of the documents the notary has notarized. If there's a journal, then that is a personal property of the notary. It's exempt from execution. The bill also provides that for electronic signatures, because with electronic documents, sometimes you can't go into the computer and notarize documents. So there's provisions and formats as to how to notarize something electronically. The bill also has a provision for people whose signatures are notarized, who, because of physical limitations, they just simply cannot sign their name. They can use a facsimile. They can use a direction to the notary. There's ways to do it. Just the law just does not provide that at this time. If a notary loses a commission, the notary may be removed from office by the governor, district court, or the commissioner of commerce. And if the notary is removed from office, then the notary must deliver the stamp to the Commissioner of Commerce. So, Mr. Chair and members, as I say, this is updating a lot of laws. There was a notary working group that worked on all these provisions. Senator Dill, do you have your amendment ready? Then I'll yield to Senator Dill then.
I guess it's not here yet.
Well, I'll stand for any questions, and if the amendment isn't ready, I'll have to progress the bill until it is ready, Mr. Chair.
Any discussion on the bill as presented by Senator Betzold? Senator Senjum.
Mr. Chair, for clarity, Senator Betzold, would a legislator no longer be able to notarize then without a stamp? Could we not, as I do, have that little piece of paper in my billfold and pull it out and do it as the occasion might arise?
Mr.
Senator Betzold.
Mr. Chair and Senator Senjum, the bill goes into effect August 1st if it's passed as it is before you. That would mean that after August 1st, you would actually have to have a stamp if you're going to exercise your, if you're going to notarize anything in your office as a legislator. And the problem is it's caused some confusion because most people, when they're looking for a notarized document, they look for a stamp. And under current law, legislators aren't required to have a stamp. And it's not always clear that this is actually a legislator that signed this. There isn't the authentication they normally look for. And so some documents have actually been questioned for it. This simply requires a legislator to actually now have a stamp, which you're not going to be able to fit into your wallet, of course. But you would have to have a stamp. You'd still be a notary, but you'd have to use a stamp in order to do that. And stamps are fairly inexpensive, but you'd have to have that.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would Senator yield for a question?
He will yield. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Senator Betzold. And you may have said this, and I missed it, and if I did, I apologize. What county officials are notarized now and will be after this bill?
Senator
Sure. Mr. Chair and Senator Ingebrigtsen, this doesn't change who are the ex officio notaries. If you look at Section 5 of the bill, clerks, recorders of towns and cities, county commissioners, county recorders, county auditors, their deputies are already ex officio notaries. They can notarize documents. The problem is that there is no set format as to what they're supposed to write down when they notarize documents. This now provides a format. For instance, it says the form of the signature is that this. The official's name, the title, the county, ex officio notary public, my term expires whenever it expires, or my term is indeterminate. You have to put that information down because right now it isn't clear what they're supposed to write down when they notarize things. It's surprising that it's gone along as long as it has. But this doesn't change who they are. It just describes how they're supposed to do it.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair, then. So the stamps are not only going to be issued then to the legislators, but also to all county employees. Is that correct? And if that's the case, who pays for it, or how does that work?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, this doesn't provide for issuing of stamps. I suppose if the Minnesota Senate made the decision out of its own budget to issue notary stamps to its members, it could do so, or if a member wanted to seek reimbursement, or if you just wanted go pay the 10, 15 bucks to get your stamp, you could do that as well. I don't know how many, to be honest with you, I don't know how many members of the legislature authorize or exercise their ex officio notary duties. I, for instance, happen to be a notary simply because I need it as a lawyer in my law practice, but you know, so that's separate from being a legislator. I just don't know how many legislators do that. But as I said, it's caused some confusion because some legislators just try to write something on out, and without a stamp, documents have been questioned.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members, and Senator Betzold, could you give me a little background? What type of education does a notary public need in order to be a notary?
Senator Betzel.
Well, Mr. Chair, when you fill out your application for your commission, you submit that to the Commissioner of Commerce. I believe as part of that process, they also have to do a criminal background check. to determine whether or not you are worthy of being able to notarize documents. As you may know, that the Minnesota Senate also has to confirm notaries. We actually did that earlier in the session when the commissions came over to us. It only took less than a minute to do, but the Minnesota Senate has to confirm the notaries. So the Department of Commerce is actually one that does the background screening. If somebody is determined to, if they're convicted of a crime, if they're determined to have exercised their notary office fraudulently or forging documents or backdating documents or whatever it takes, as I say, we already have in law that a notary may be removed from office. Right now, the law provides that they only may be removed by office from the governor, who ultimately makes the appointment, or district court. This also allows the Commissioner of Commerce to do so, and I could just call your attention to 17 of the bill, which is current law. It just expands on that particular process.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you, Senator Betzold, for giving us a little background of what it takes to be a notary. And my big question is if it takes that type of requirement and that type of background search, then why do legislators become automatic notaries without all of that stuff that you told us that real notaries go through? Quite honestly, I don't see why we in the legislature even need to be an automatic notary in the first place. I don't run for office, and when I put myself before the public, I don't tell them that I'm going to be a better notary public than my opponent. I just don't understand why we even have that designation. I don't understand the historical aspect of it. And it just seems like we have this discussion every year or two, and it seems to waste a little bit of our legislative time in trying to justify this added function of our office, which I don't think is really, I don't even know if it's even constitutional for us to be a notary public in the first place. So I don't know why we continue going through the drama of tweaking the notary public for ex officios when we really haven't done anything to qualify for the job. And that's the question I have. It's not a question to you or affecting your bill, but it's a commentary that I have to have because I've sat here many years listening to the ex officio notary public responsibilities of our office, and I just don't understand. I don't think the public understands it either, but nevertheless, I still have people on occasion knocking at my door wanting me to notarize something. Now, I don't have the ex officio language tucked away by my front door in order to stamp something on their legal document. And usually I'm wearing a T-shirt and blue jeans like real people in my district. So, and I don't even have a sign out front. So I don't know why they come and track me down. Maybe they think I'm going to give them a discount, which I'm not. And just wanted to let you know that I don't know why we have this designation on our official office.
Just, Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, it's a 1955 law. For whatever reason, the legislators in 1955 decided that every member of the legislature, while in office and residing from district to which elected, may have an official seal which to authenticate their official acts. The 1955 legislature decided the legislators ought to be notaries, and that's still current law. Whether it makes sense or not, I don't know. As you may also remember, the legislature also put a constitutional ballot on, I think, in about 1982 to eliminate our role in confirming notaries, and the voters did not approve that, so that's why to this day we still have to confirm the notaries, even though we try to take it out of the Constitution.
Okay, I think we're going to progress this bill. I think we've discussed it enough. It won't take but a minute.
Okay, I'll request progress on the bill.
The bill has been progressed. I think that completes. Senator Lori, we can revert. Do you want to set up a conference committee or not today? All right, haven't been here all day. Announcements of Senate interest.
Mr. Chair, we're still in the committee of the whole. I think Senator Dill has got his amendments now, though.
What? This is a half an hour wait for an amendment. I'm not sure why, but I guess we can revert back to Senate File 214. Senator Betzel.
Senator Dill, are you ready?
Senator Dill.
I'd have to make the motion again if you're ready. I'll move that when the committee to rise, Senate File 214 be recommended to pass. And I'll yield to Senator Dill.
No. Mr. President, or Mr. Chairman?
Yes. Senator Dill.
I have the amendment in my hand that I was going to offer second after the first one failed.
Who's on first? We're going to do this, Larry. I think we're just going to do this tomorrow. And
Mr. President, I'll request progress.
Progress requested. Progress granted. Senator Pogemiller, to arise the report.
Well, Mr. President, I move that the committee do now rise and report.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that the report of the committee of the whole, as kept by the secretary, be now adopted.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
Mr. President, I believe.
We're done with yours today. We're going to do it tomorrow. Senator Pogemiller.
I believe we are about ready to wrap up here for the day. If there are announcements.
Announcements of Senate interest. Senator, without objection, Senator Anderson, Berglund, and Sharon will be excused from today's session all day, and Senator Scheid. Senator Ress from 9 to 10:15, Kelash from 9 to 9:40, Chaudhry from 9 to 9:55, Gerlach from 9 to 9:30, Senator Moi from 9 to 9:30, M. Olson from 9 to 9:15, and from 10 to the end of the session, Senator Johnson all day, and Senator Torres Ray from 9 to 10:15. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, members, tomorrow we will meet at 10:30 and vote on the calendar, and that'll pretty much be it. So allow the members of the minority to prepare themselves for their weekend. I hope you have a less humid, less crowded room than we had. So. So I do know that there will be Senator Cohen's committee's meeting in the morning, and Senator Berglund may be meeting in both the morning and afternoon, so there will be committee meetings tomorrow. But I believe the floor session will be relatively brief. We'll vote on the calendar, and that'll be pretty much it. So, Mr. President, I move that the Senate adjourn till Wednesday, April 28th, 10:30. And, Mr. President, obviously at 11:30, members should be at the Great Hall for the potluck today. Potluck at 11:30 today. Renew my motion to adjourn till 10:30 a.m. Wednesday.
On the motion to adjourn to 10:30 a.m. tomorrow, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senate stands adjourned.